That's not how future picks smells.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us. I'm going to call to order today's meeting of the House Committee on Higher Education and Workforce Development. Today is the 3rd of February, 2014, and here we are in the short session with no shortage of things to do. So we need to organize, do a few of those things before we dive into the couple of bills that we have before us today. So in order to do that, we need to open an organizational meeting and discuss the committee rules. Victoria, would you like to provide just a little bit of info about the rules that go around?
I would. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Our rules are similar to the rules that you have had before you in the past. I would like to draw your attention to two exceptions, however. Item 15 on the second page refers to the intent to file a minority report. Last session it was 48 hours. This session it is you need to file your intent by 5 p.m. on the day that the action on the bill is taken, and then you need to submit the final minority report by 5 p.m. the following day. So it's really a one business day kind of a thing as opposed to the 48 hours. Also, item 17 on the second page regards notice of potential conflict of interest. You need to do so in the committee meeting if you have a perceived conflict of interest, and then you need to file a written statement of your conflict with committee staff by 5 p.m. also the next business day. If you have any other questions on the rules, we'd be happy to see if we can get you an answer.
Is the definition of conflict of interest included in
the that should be taken up with the chief clerk.
It's not included in the rule.
No.
That's what I was asking.
Mm-mm.
Further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Could you or Victoria then? So we have to have any bills have to be worked by next Wednesday, is that correct, to move on?
That is correct, I believe.
And all
the first chamber bills.
All measures also need to be on posted. Work sessions
this
need to be posted
Friday,
on
this Friday.
Exactly, this
scheduled
Friday.
Work session this
mm-hmm.
Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Voted on by next Wednesday, are they?
For our committee, that's correct.
And do you have any indication of our workload?
We're going to meet with the vice chairs of the committee tomorrow afternoon, 2:45. It looks like we have a reasonable amount. 12 bills were referred to the committee, and I think we have a path forward. Okay.
Thank you. Is that including committee bills, Mr. Chair?
Those that will make it through, yes. So, open a work session. And maybe someone has a motion.
I do. And Chair Harker, now that we've all read these rules and have gone over them two or three times, I move to adopt the proposed committee rules.
Okay. Rep. Gallegos moves to adopt the proposed committee rules. Any discussion? Appears not. No further discussion either. So, seeing none, are there any objections? No. Okay. So, the motion passes and the rules are adopted. Close the organizational meeting. And, with a slight change from what appears on some of the documentation, we are going to skip the informational hearing on House Bill 4058 and go directly to a public hearing on 4058. We had just set up the informational hearing in case the paperwork wasn't in order in time for us to dive right into the public hearing, but it was. And so I would like to open a public hearing on House Bill 4058. We have several people who have signed up here. You know what? How do I gavel this back and realize that I forgot to let people introduce themselves? Can I?
It's fine. You could just leave the hearing open.
Okay, hearing is open, and let's begin with letting each of the committee members, some of whom are new, introduce themselves. All right, just a couple of minutes about the district. So might as well start down at that end.
Representative Barbara Smith Warner from Northeast Portland, Park Rose and Waywood Park.
I am Mark Johnson, and I live in Hood River, represent House District 52. I am happy to be here.
I'm Mitch Greenlick. I live in House District 33, which is some of Northwest Portland out into unincorporated Washington County.
John Huffman from the Dalles, House District 59. I'm happy now. I just came from Ways and Means, and there was no candy there. So Senator Devlin and I are going to have to talk. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Chris Harker from District 34, which is Beaverton, Cedar Mills, and unincorporated Washington County.
Joe Gallegos, House District 30, which is Silicon Valley. That includes North Hillsboro, North Plains, Aloha, and about two or three houses in Beaverton.
Good morning. I'm Gene Wisden, State Representative, House District 53, Sun River, Tumalo, Redmond, parts of Deschutes County, and parts of Bend.
Good morning. My name's Chris Gorsuch, Representative for District 49, which is portions of Gresham, all of Wood Village, Fairview, Troutdale, and a very small piece of far eastern Portland.
All right, very good. Welcome, one and all. And another thing that I neglected to mention early on is please silence any cell phones that you have in here. And that being the case, I think we've got the administrative things out of the way, and we can dive into that public hearing. And I would like very much to call up Senator Michael Dembro, no stranger to this committee. Rep. Gorsuch, Rep. Johnson, do you want to speak from here? You want to jump down there? Very good.
I thought we wouldn't have to put up with him.
Just less frequently.
Senator, occupy the dais here.
Please start whenever you're ready.
You have to have my implements. Otherwise, I won't do very well.
I feel your pain.
Well, good morning again, Chair Harker, members of the committee. For the record, I am Chris Gorsuch, Representative for District 49, encompassing the cities of Troutdale, Fairview, Wood Village, and Gresham. I am here today with my other colleagues to speak in support of HB 4058. HB 4058 would add career technical education to Oregon's education goals, and it would clarify the goals to include vocational education and workforce development. Back in 2011, the legislature approved what is known as the 40-40-20 goal, which states that by 2025, all adult Oregonians will hold a high school diploma or equivalent. 40% of them will have an associate's degree or post-secondary certificate, and 40% will hold a bachelor's degree or advanced degree. The middle 40 currently includes associate degrees and other post-secondary credentials. While the Oregon Department of Education and the HEC are making important decisions about what post-secondary credentials includes, there are some programs that we must make sure are not overlooked at the implementation level in our state schools. This bill clarifies that apprenticeship programs are included. The apprenticeship programs that would be included would have to be registered with the Bureau of Labor and Industries Apprenticeship and Training Division and meet their standard of apprenticeship, therefore making sure that only the highest quality programs are accepted. Apprenticeship programs are a great fit for our educational goals because these programs often take an equivalent amount of time as a college degree to complete, up to 5 years in some cases. They involve many classroom hours and require mathematics knowledge, mechanical ability, problem-solving skills, and the ability to work collaboratively with a team. Apprenticeships can lead to opportunities for further education, including college certificates or associate degrees. In the past few years, the legislature has invested millions of dollars in career technical education in our high schools and middle schools. For some students, taking advantage of these programs, college is not the right next step, but apprenticeship programs could offer a continuing pathway into a high-wage job. As a community college instructor, I understand the place that workforce development programs play in strengthening our communities and in creating well-paid jobs that benefit our economy. In my district, we have three apprenticeship training facilities that prepare workers for well-paying jobs as electricians, carpenters, and sheet metal workers. HB 4058 will ensure that such apprenticeship programs are not overlooked. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Mark Johnson, State Representative, House District 52. Happy also to lend my support to this concept. I think it's important to point out that we're not creating new policy here. We're not adding anything new to the definition of what would be approved or what would be recognized as one of the contributing factors to achieving 40-40-20, but I do think this bill shines a very bright light on one aspect of that. And as we look, particularly as you look at that middle 40 of 40-40-20, I think that that is really where, as we as a state try to achieve that goal, that aspirational goal, I think that middle 40 has tremendous potential. It's a little bit more direct career path for some people than a bachelor's degree might be, but I think it also allows multiple segments of our population to be able to be benefited by that, i.e. we could be talking high school graduates as well as someone who's simply looking for that new career or being retooled into a different area that perhaps they need to have some new skills. So I think it's a very, if you will, target-rich environment in terms of making these offerings available to Oregon's residents as a means of attaining a legitimate career pathway. But I think this bill also, I think, will help us in other ways too, because I think making this much more clear in the statute, i.e. that apprenticeship is recognized as a significant part of that 40-40-20, allows us, I think, to take that ambition down into the high school realm now, down into our K-12 environment, and through our Aspire programs to be able to emphasize apprenticeship and CTE certificates as a real viable career pathway. Because as we all know, it's a cliche that everybody isn't college bound, and that's exactly right, but they shouldn't be deterred or feel less because they choose this pathway other than somebody who may choose a university pathway. So again, you all have heard it many times over the past few years, but our industry is saying that we're on the threshold of a real problem here, having enough qualified technical workers to fill the jobs that need to be filled within the state of Oregon. So from the economic development standpoint, from helping Oregon's economy, I really think this is a good piece of legislation, not because it creates new policy, but it just really shines a light of emphasis on an area where I think there's real promise for Oregonians. So I would encourage your support.
Sir.
Thank you, Chair Harker, Vice Chairs Huffman and Gallegos, members of the committee. It's a pleasure to be here before you.
You never left.
Sorry. Yes, I feel schizophrenic, but for the moment I feel totally grounded here with House Higher Ed.
Kind of a thing.
Yeah. Yes.
Don't forget to introduce yourself, please.
Oh, yes. Who was this person? I'm Michael Dembro. I'm the state senator for Senate District 23, Northeast and Southeast Portland. Real pleasure to be here. I want to just start off by thanking Rep. Gorsuch for having this bill drafted and Rep. Johnson for chief sponsoring it on this side. And for the committee, Chair Harker, for having this be the first bill that this committee entertains. I think that in and of itself sends a very strong signal. This, as Rep. Johnson said, is not a new issue for this committee. We've been, talking about CTE and the value of apprenticeship and talking about post-secondary in different ways than have been traditional. And I think this bill really fits right in. I'm one of those people who gets himself asked all the time about 40-40-20. And one of the complaints that I hear very often is that apprenticeship is not included in 40-40-20. Mm. And I say to people when they say that, I say, no, it's there. It's in the middle 40. And, so they say, no, that's not what we're told. We're told that it's not, that apprenticeship doesn't count. And they go back and check with their people. And their people tell them apprenticeship doesn't count. you know, as Rep. Johnson said, there is a lot of ambiguity there around it. You know, I can tell you that at least from my perspective, our intention mm-hmm. from day one was that apprenticeship was part of the Middle 40, in fact, was a very key part of the Middle 40. I do think, though, that it would be useful for us to get this on the record in the statute, and that's what this bill is intended to do, to send the message, as Rep. Johnson said, you know, to those counselors in high school, you know, who are steering students in different ways. And, you know, I think we've all come to understand that different people have different learning styles. And the sort of prejudices, if I can put it that way, that existed for years against, quote, vocational education, you know, that's a lower track to put students that you don't want to pay attention to. You know, that was not true then, and it certainly is not true now when people who go into career technical ed and apprenticeship have to have, you know, a high level of math and mm-hmm. you know, really have to have the same skills we've come to understand that people do who are in regular college transfer kinds of courses. It's people have different learning styles. For some people, learning those theoretical concepts in a hands-on manner is what really makes it work for them. And really, I think that's how we need to consider apprenticeship as a key part of post-secondary, but post-secondary that is more on-the-job training, more hands-on, more applied learning, and it's one that has a tremendous track record. Last session, at the very end of last session, in those painful waning days of the session, mm-hmm. We dealt with a bill, Senate Bill 782, some of you may remember, which had to do with the state committing itself to apprenticeship in public works and saying that, you know, we consider apprenticeship a key part of workforce development in this state, a key part of post-secondary education in this state. And so a certain percentage of state projects each state-funded project should have some degree of apprenticeship attached to it. And that task force with Rep. Johnson and I are on now is focused on working out the details on that. I see this bill as very closely related to that, and I urge you to pass it out as soon as you can, and let's get this message sent very clearly to the people of Oregon. Thank you.
Okay, well said, gentlemen. We have a couple of questions and comments up here. Rep. Greenlink first.
Thank you. I think my question is Representative Johnson, but I guess all of you guys. I continue to be concerned that the starting age for apprenticeship tends to be 25 to 27.
Mm-hmm.
And that just seems to me there's such a terrible waste between high school and that period, and I heard different reasons for it. But, Representative Johnson, you mentioned that this will allow us to get closer to the high school counselors. Is that part of the secret to get this going?
Representative Greenlink, I think this will certainly help. I think it will give those, you know, we have Aspire now, and I don't know how many high schools across the state of Oregon, but it's a growing program, and you're familiar with that. I think it's a counseling service to help students plan their pathway, first of all, to completion, to get that high school degree, and then beyond. How do we help you fill out your FAFSA? How do we help you apply to colleges and that kind of thing? But I think having this spelled out and having it in black and white, if you will, in the statute, along with the definition of what 40-40 means, is going to give those programs, I think, added impetus to add, you know, apprenticeship as a viable career alternative, not alternative, but pathway. And as we couple that, I think, with stories about, along with that, that what the private sector really needs, that there are jobs out there waiting for technical, you know, kids with the skills, and they can be right out of high school. It's a fairly short pathway. It could be to a good-paying job. It could be the entryway to a really long-lived career that we definitely need in Oregon. I mean, it's no secret to you and everybody else, I think, that so much of our skilled workforce are within the last, you know, years of their careers, and we just don't have a good pipeline, I think, to get them what they're needing to replace those workers. So there's demand, but as we put this into statute, I think it's going to give the those career counselors, I think, added impetus to be able to add this along with all of the other post-secondary options as a real viable career option and begin to talk about it that way. It hasn't been, as you well know, I think, since we've eliminated a lot of our shop classes and our industrial arts classes in high school, I think, unfortunately, it kind of got taken off the agendas as something to be discussed. So I think it's a good way forward.
I just follow very briefly. Can we also, I understand some of it is that some of the apprenticeship programs won't accept young people, that they want them to get to a different stage in their life. Can we encourage them to...
I think that this could be a vehicle to really look at those programs, too, and ensure that they're capable of meeting an increased demand that there may be in the number of applicants. So I think it's another tool in that process.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Of course. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do agree that this is probably necessary. It's good cleanup and housekeeping. Question, I don't know if Rep. Gorsuch or who wants to take this on, but on the process part and registering with BOLI for qualified programs, do we know of programs out there that may qualify but aren't currently registered with BOLI? And do you see this being any way a hindrance to any program out there, some kind of a roadblock?
Well, I don't see it as a roadblock, but do you have any ideas about the BOLI aspect of this? I don't.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Rep. Huffman, the as I understand it, and Rep. Johnson and I are coming to growing awareness of how this system works, thanks to the task force, you know, the registered apprenticeship programs are, you know, deal with both the union and the non-union sector in apprenticeship. But what happens if you're an apprentice, if you are a registered training agent and you're, and the apprentice is a registered apprentice, when they finish and get that journeyman's card, it is respected all across the country. And, you know, so it really has the same effect as a degree, you know, or a certificate. In many cases, they also have officially, you know, degrees and certificates from community colleges. But in any case, having gone through that registered apprenticeship program, it, you know, it just, it brings validity to it. So I think it, and it gives a, you know, a good check on quality control of the program.
Sure. So I'm assuming BOLI has some type of checklist or criteria that a program would have to meet before they qualify to be registered.
Representative, I think you're correct. And as Senator Dembro mentioned, that this is one of the topics that our apprenticeship task force is looking at, in addition to some of the ratios of journeymen to apprentices and so forth, and percentages of apprenticeships on projects, how this education aspect, how the pipeline of getting new workers into the apprenticeship CTE type programs, how is it working, how is it not working, or one of the issues that we're going to be taking up. So it's an ongoing learning field for both of us and I think for the committee in general. So it certainly is going to be a topic as we go into this next couple months of our meeting. So this again gives us an impetus to really dive in on this issue as well as the others that we already tasked with as a task force.
Just closing comment, I just want to encourage the various boards in the state to exercise what I would consider common sense in some of this stuff, too.
It's too much to ask.
I know. Trust me, I sat through a hearing. The plumbing board, for example. Somebody can be a journeyman plumber in California for 25 years, move to Oregon, but before they can sit for the test, they have to go through the apprenticeship program. So since we're talking about apprentices and the apprenticeship programs, I fully support it, and great programs and a great need. Believe it or not, there are some boards out there that require apprenticeship in certain cases that I think are somewhat unnecessary. And so I just wanted to get that on the record that I think some boards need to, and we don't have that problem with electrical. I should say that. to my friend on the front row, that's not a problem there. It's specific to plumbing. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
One additional comment I might make, Mr. Chair, but, you know, 40-40-20, we all know, is meant to apply to and benefit all of the state of Oregon. And Representative Gorsuch mentioned that he has some apprenticeship programs in his district, but I don't think that's symptomatic of the entire state. So, again, this is another area that we need to look in to make sure that we have good geographical access to these programs, that they can feed the businesses that are looking for these sort of qualified workers. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Good points. Rep. Gallegos.
Yeah, I just want to say I appreciate your bringing this forth. I think I would respectfully disagree with the senator, though, if I may, in that, you know, I at least my experience was clearly that, yeah, shop and apprenticeships programs were a way to distinguish those who were college-bound and those who weren't. That was a long time ago. And I think this really reflects, I think, what we're moving into. And thinking about Boley, I think with the reinstitution of a lot of what's called now the 21st century shops, I think, you know, what we're doing and what this bill does, I think, is really help us to another piece of the restructuring of higher education, another piece of the process. And I appreciate that we're also talking about high school, community college, and the connections between sort of how do we develop a workforce and a pathway that we can really take them into the 21st century. I mean, shop classes are not like they used to be when I took them. And I can also say from my own experience that as a boilermaker, when I got my journeyman card, it really meant a lot, not just in terms of certification, but my paycheck went considerably higher. So, again, this is very useful. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen, for bringing the bill and informing us. Let's see. We've got several people signed up here. I'd like to call Gerald Hamilton, John Rakowitz, and Elena Guinea, please.
Thank you, Representative Harker, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ilana Guinea, here on behalf of the 250,000 members of the Oregon AFL-CIO. John Rakowitz has said that I am supposed to testify first, so I'll go with that. Uh-huh. I, to be perfectly honest, have very little left to add given the incredible introduction that our chief co-sponsors of this bill gave. I would encourage your support for HB 4058. We think that this is a very simple yet important bill. As some of our co-sponsors said, to just raise the profile of the opportunities out there through apprenticeship programs at the implementation level. There's never been a doubt in my mind that the Oregon Department of Education, that the governor's staff who have been working on the 40-40-20 plan intended to include apprenticeship in that middle 40. But we have seen at the implementation level where, you know, in our schools, kids are looking at what their next steps are and what opportunities are out there, that a lot of people don't know about apprenticeship programs or don't know where they should be included in those standards. We just want to make sure, especially at a time when our state is investing so much in CTE programs, that students know what the next steps are available to them, which is why we brought you this bill. So I'd like to thank our sponsors who are on the committee and encourage you all to support this bill moving forward. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Chair Harker, members of the committee, John Rakowitz with AGC Associated General Contractors. We represent a broad cross-section of commercial contractors in the state of Oregon, and we're really pleased to be here in support of this bill. It really couldn't be more timely in light of the workforce challenges and shifts that our industry is facing in the next few years. And apprenticeship has always been a central building block to high-quality construction. We're talking from our perspective, you know, bridges like Selwood, large construction projects. These are not projects you want to fail. So I just want to talk just briefly what we face as an industry between now and 2020. today, the highest skilled long-time craftsmen and women in our industry are on average 48 years of age. The Employment Department's latest projection showed that that trend will translate to a 23% reduction in our current workforce by the year 2020. That's a substantial reduction, roughly 11,000 skilled workers. On top of that, if our industry grows as it's currently projected by the Employment Department, we're going to need another 12,000 new workers to meet that growth potential. When you add that up, we're talking 23,000 workers. There really is, from our perspective as an industry, this is essential that we recognize apprenticeship as a well-paying job and a career. And we think this bill, it doesn't change the world. It doesn't make apprenticeship more than it's always been, but we think it's a critical first step in doing that. For that reason, we are very much in support of this bill. Happy to answer any questions.
Hi, Chair Harker, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Gerald Hamilton. I'm the interim executive director of CCWD, Community College and Workforce Development. And I thought I'd take a little bit of time here this morning to just give you a little background on the community college's involvement in the Middle 40 around this issue. 13 of Oregon's community colleges offer AAS degrees in either apprenticeships or some nature along in that realm. Those degrees include construction aid general, electrical apprenticeships, and industrial mechanics and maintenance. Within those, there are occupations that include plumbing, sheet metal, painting, carpentry, brick mason, electrical, and manufacturing, to name a few, and there are certainly others. I just say that these programs are really valuable to the community colleges. They certainly are one of the places that we train students to be employable and to have those lifelong family wage jobs. I just to reiterate personal experience when I was in the community college in Klamath Falls, I got to observe a lot of these programs. And clearly, the one though that comes to mind is plant electronics, and I watch students come into those that's partnership and with the private sector, and we were able to train people that went out and got good jobs. And not only is the program extremely successful, the employees were extremely successful for their entire lifetime. So I would just say that the colleges are deeply involved in the apprenticeships, and thank you for your time. Let me give you that background.
Yes, Rep. Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Gerald, you brought up my previous question. Can you tell me, are community college apprenticeship programs registered with BOLI?
Yeah, my understanding is they are. I would want to go back before I absolutely say and check and make sure everything. I have not gone down the list and asked every one of them. Representative Huffman, but that's my understanding.
That's what I mean. That's not. Any further discussion right now? No? Okay. Thank you very much. Oh, yes. Oh, Greenlink. Sorry.
You say there are 13. Is that 13 out of 17? 13 out of, Chair Harker, Representative Greenlink, 13 out of 17. Yes, sir.
Why do four not have?
I can't answer that this morning. I'm sorry. I can certainly get that information, too, if you'd like.
Other? Okay. Thank you, John. The next three people, please. Daryl Fuller, Ben Cannon, Andrea Henderson, and on deck we have, I think it's Sean Miller. I may have the last name wrong. John Mullis and Betsy Earls. Whenever you're ready, in whatever order you choose.
Chair Harker, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Andrea Henderson from the Oregon Community College Association, and just wanted to briefly indicate the support from the community colleges for this bill. As you are well aware, we are very interested in the Middle 40 and what community colleges can do to help with that, and have always considered apprenticeship part of that Middle 40. And so understanding that there's some miscommunication and need for clarification out there, we're very supportive of this, and we'd be happy to answer any questions you might have. Thank you.
Chair Harker, members of the committee, for the record, Ben Cannon, Executive Director for the Higher Education Coordinating Commission. I think there's a risk that 40-40-20 in a bill like this seems to some merely symbolic and a sort of hollow gesture. I think it's not, and I want to explain why by giving you a sense of what how we're using 40-40-20 to do, as I think the legislature intended, to drive policy and investment decisions, at least in the executive branch's recommendations to you. So without just sort of going into elaborating on any detail, I just want to put that stake in the ground that your work on 40-40-20, the definitions that you adopt and potential modifications to definitions that you adopt for 40-40-20 will drive the policy and budget recommendations that we bring forward. And as a result, I think this is a significant bill. In terms of the numbers, again, I think maybe useful to take a step back. Why 40-40-20? It's been a couple of years. Where are we? How's it going? The 2011 legislature established this goal that 100% of students would complete high school, an expression that all students are capable, and it's the job of educators and policymakers to provide the levels of supports that are necessary for them all to succeed at that level. You established the 40 and 40 goals, partly out of a recognition of the workforce demands, the labor market needs that require a higher educated population, and also because I believe you believed that by better educating Oregon's population, you would in fact propel an economic transformation that would put more Oregonians to work in higher wage, higher skill jobs. I think you finally acknowledged in that goal an appreciation for the intrinsic benefits, the non-economic benefits of education that all Oregonians should enjoy. As we've worked in the executive branch with 40-40-20, it presents some challenges. Not merely because of the level of ambitiousness of the targets, the ambitiousness that I think are appropriate, but also because of some definitional issues. The statute, as you're looking at in the bill before you, describes a goal for all adults, right? That all adults by the year 2025 would have completed high school or would have, and 80% of them would have gone on to some form of post-secondary credential degree or apprenticeship. And that alone, I think, may be somewhat different from what at least the way that many of us have thought about 40-40-20 and its appropriateness for the pipeline of Oregonians. Working with the HEC, working with the Oregon Education Investment Board, with Gerald Hamilton, the governor's office, and others, have devised some recommendations, some of them which would be appropriate to bring ultimately to you, for clarifying the application of the 40-40-20 goal to the adult population, for the application of the goal to the what we call the pipeline population, that graduating high school class of 2025, today's first graders, the way we've often heard and talked about that. We also have definitional questions around the middle 40, and I think that's where this bill comes in. What's included? The language in the bill is very broad, certificates and credentials, perhaps not as broad as it ought to be in order to encapsulate the apprenticeships that, as Andrea and as this bill's sponsors have suggested, have always been, I believe, intended to be included as part of the middle 40. The only sort of concerns or caveat related to this bill would be I'd ask the legislature's appreciation for the possibility that there will be others who are looking to see a particular piece of the middle 40 more clearly defined in statute. The risk there is that there are thousands, I mean literally thousands, of potential certificates and credentials that might appropriately be included in the middle 40. I think apprenticeships are certainly distinct in certain respects from the credentials, and that there are certificates that are called out or are referred to in the existing law, but I would just note the sort of potential that this opens that door for additional desire to clarify via statute, and I think that could become a challenging place for the legislature to sit. That said, again, I want to underscore the point that the previous speakers have made about the importance of apprenticeship and their contribution helping meet the state's economic and economic goals and goals for well-being, and appreciate that this bill puts that front and center.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Darrell Fuller on behalf of the Oregon State Association of Plumbing, Heating, and Cooling Contractors. Simply want to indicate our support of the bill and the importance of including apprenticeship programs in the 40-40-20 goal. And with your indulgence, I'll make a couple of comments on some of the discussion we had prior. Representative Greenlick talked about the age of people entering into apprenticeship programs being perhaps a little bit older than we would want, and I certainly don't want to suggest we would discourage younger people from entering apprenticeship programs, but anecdotally would suggest to you that a significant population in apprenticeship programs are people that are completing a 2-, 4-, 6-year service in the military. And they've come back and they've decided that the military isn't what they want to do as a career, but they're a lot more mature than they were when they graduated from high school. They're more career-oriented, and they're looking for something that they can do as a trade. And the apprenticeship programs, I think, are especially attractive to some of those people, and that might be part of the reason why maybe the demographic is slightly older than what we might see in other programs that are designed for people that are immediately post high school. Also, would mention Representative Gallego has talked about the difference in apprenticeship programs today versus perhaps a generation ago. I would suggest that when I was growing up, the kids that do really well in math and science go to 4-year schools, and everybody else kind of we looked for something else for them to do. I don't think we want those students necessarily opening up Representative Greenlick's electric car and looking at what's in there unless they're really good at math and science. One of my other clients is the Northwest Auto Trades Association. We don't have necessarily an apprenticeship program. There are community college programs for the auto trades, but I will tell you that getting into a car and repairing not just the electric vehicles, but even today's combustion vehicles have multiple computers operating those systems, and we want to make sure that the people that are working on those systems are very, very bright when it comes to math and science and figures and measuring. And so it is a completely different kind of program than one even when I was in a high school, which was just very few years ago. So thank you for your time.
Gallegos.
Thank you for that. I really want to, again, sort of respectfully disagree with Dr. Greenlick and his concern about the age of the apprenticeship. I am concerned about the increasingly the growing demographic among seniors. I mean, we've got 1 out of 4 people are going to be over 65 years old soon, very soon, in the next couple of years, if not now. And a lot of them can't afford to retire, and so they're looking for other kinds of career opportunities. And I think that even apprenticeships of seniors is something that we need to think about.
Well, Mr. Chair, if I might, and in the plumbing, heating, and cooling contractors, I believe the average age of a journeyman plumber in Oregon is approaching, if not exceeding, 50 years.
Okay. Other discussion? Not now. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you, Ben, for your comments. The last three people we have signed up are Sean Miller, John Mullis, and Betsy Earls. Would you join us, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, Sean Miller. I'm here today on behalf of the Associated Builders and Contractors and the Independent Electrical Contractors of Oregon in support of House Bill 4058. Both programs sponsored administer apprenticeship programs, including electricians, limited energy technicians, and voice and data, HVAC, air testing, and soon glazing or glasswork, just to name a few. And we do support this particular bill adding apprenticeship to the governor's 40-40-20 plan. Many of these apprenticeship programs in the crafts are 2- and 4-year degrees, and so these apprentices are spending upwards of 2,000 hours gaining on-the-job experience while they're spending time in the classroom weekly learning subjects such as, codes, theory, related math, safety, and proper use of tools. And so this knowledge and understanding that they're gaining through the apprenticeship programs is significant, and far more than just quote-unquote high school, as their skills and work are considered without this important bill. And so, again, we appreciate the sponsors bringing this bill forward and the work that's been done, and would happily support the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I am Betsy Earls, representing Associated Oregon Industries. AOI represents a broad cross-section of manufacturers all across the state of Oregon, and those members are very supportive of career and technical education at all levels, starting in middle school, going all the way through high school, and all the way up through apprenticeship training. It's very important to us and our members that workforce training and the education communities remain closely linked and not siloed and separated out as two separate programs or entities. We think that by calling out apprenticeship programs as specifically included in the state's education goals for in the middle 40 solidifies this link and also affirms the importance of apprenticeship training as a viable career path. So we would encourage your support of this bill moving forward, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thanks.
Good morning, Chair Harker, members of the committee. My name is John Molis. I'm the Executive Secretary for the Oregon State Building and Construction Trades Council, which is an umbrella organization for about 25,000 union construction workers. I'm also the proud graduate of a 6,000-hour union apprenticeship program. Our affiliated member unions run apprenticeship programs in cooperation with our signatory employers in every occupation in the construction industry throughout the state of Oregon. And in addition to the programs that Mr. Miller mentioned, there's also some apprenticeships in the manufacturing industry that are registered with Boley. And we see this, we obviously support this bill. We think it'll help shine a better light on apprenticeship opportunities that have already been discussed quite a bit in earlier testimony, so I'm not going to repeat that. I'm hoping one other end result might be is I think there's a lot of opportunity for more apprenticeships in metals, in manufacturing, in some parts of the healthcare industry that, in my opinion, are underserved. And those industries and the people that are going into them would be much better served by a certified structured apprenticeship program. And in my opinion, that will take joint labor management cooperation to make that happen. So with that, I will close. I would respectfully urge your support for House Bill 4058, and I would do my best to answer any questions. Thank you.
Do we have any questions or comments for these fine people? This one. I guess not. Thank you.
Thank you
very much for the testimony and the support.
We do not have a postponed bill yet, so we can go into the next session and close the public hearing and then go into the other public
hearing.
And
the other one?
Yeah,
okay.
Since we're not going to move forward, if I can make a comment.
Yes.
Brief.
Okay. We are lacking a fiscal on this bill, so we cannot go into a work session right now. So, Rep. Huffman, you wanted to make a couple of comments?
Just one. Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a new year and a new session, and it was briefly mentioned by our first panel, the chief sponsors of the bill, and I would like to just highlight a little more the advising part. Middle school, high school, community college, and on up, advising is going to be critical at every level to advise our students as to what options there are available out there and what it's going to take to get in them. So again, I want to stress advising is critical. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Good point. Yes. Gorsuch, please.
Thank you, Chair Harker. The one thing I would like to go back, first, I completely agree with Rep. Huffman, and I want to go back to something that Mr. Cannon indicated before, and I can certainly understand that people would be concerned that there could be a lot of other people come to the legislature and say, put us into this. But the point of this bill is the fact that we've identified a problem. There is a problem, and while it's been implied, and the as you heard from Senator Dembro and Representative Johnson, it was always meant to be part of 404020. This bill specifically clarifies that. I don't see it as opening the door to an avalanche of other requests. I mean, perhaps it will, but this bill is really there for one reason, and that is we know apprenticeship is important. It was always considered to be important for the original bill, and that's what we're trying to accomplish here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I think clarifying the intent. Sure. We'll have one more speaker. Yes. And then we'll get on to the next bill.
Sure. Thank you, Chair Harker. For the record, my name is Joe Esmond, business agent for the IBW Local 48, also a proud graduate of our apprenticeship, which I started at age 38. So, anyway, I know our trades and other trades do a lot of outreach to your point, Representative Huffman, invite the counselors in, and well, vice versa, show and tell. So anything we can do around the state, you can get a hold of John Bowles, and we can open those doors for you. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. Yes.
Hey, I really would like to comment, although I'm not sure what our vice chair disagrees with me on, but I'll find out privately. But I had no intention to suggest that we ought to discriminate against older folks, although you were maybe senile by that point. I don't know whether you
I can't hear you.
But I really do think, yes, I think it makes sense to go in the Army and then come out into an apprenticeship program, or to do one thing and then later decide you want to be in an apprenticeship program. But I also just fear that we're losing a bunch of people between, say, 19 when they graduate from high school, and they get into maybe flipping burgers at McDonald's or something for a while before they can get into an apprenticeship program. That's what worries me. I think there are some apprenticeship programs that, in fact, say, well, let's wait till the kid's brain develops a little more before we get him in here and let him play with all these sharp tools. And I think that's the problem I'm trying to address. I mean, I think it's discriminating against younger people. Yeah. I think that's a big problem.
There's no discrimination. And I'm not the labor commissioner, but I know the requirements are 18 years old, CN eligible for ours, GED, U.S. citizen, apply. That being said, at 18, how many of us ever expected to be sitting in these rooms?
All right. Thanks. Well, good points, and I think that the conversation has attempted to deal with folks at all of these ages. Let's then, because we still do not have the fiscal, correct? Mm-hmm. All right, so I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 4058. I'm not going to open the work session. We're going to jump instead to our next bill and open a public hearing on House Bill 4020. I'd like to call up Eric Meslow, and as you... are coming up.
4020 would have been a better number for you, Bill.
You think so? 4020?
I think so. It's a good number for this one as well, though.
Victoria, would you like to? Sure. We should talk to the speaker about that number.
Well, I leave that to you. Victoria is going to brief us on what this bill would do.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 4020 changes the entities responsible for analyzing the biennial performance reviews submitted by the Engineering and Technology Industry Council from Oregon University System Chancellor and State Board of Higher Education to the Chief Education Officer and Oregon Education Investment Board effective July 1, 2014. You also have -1 amendments in your packet that removed the phrase, especially in the Portland metropolitan area, from Section 1, subparagraph 3A.
Mr. Meslow, would you care to speak to this bill? Thank you, Victoria.
Absolutely, Chair Harker. Thank you very much for having me here this morning. Chair Harker, Vice Chair Huffman, Vice Chair Gallegos. My name is Eric Meslow. I'm the President and CEO of Timmercon, Inc., a manufacturer based out of Tualatin, Oregon. And for the record, I also live in Tualatin, Oregon. I'm here today, however, as my duties as Chair of ETIC. ETIC is the Engineering Technology Industry Council. And I have two purposes today. I wanted to briefly give you guys additional history on ETIC, our performance to date, and then discuss House Bill 4020. And yes, that's a great number. Thank you very much for assigning it. I can remember this one very easily. And express my support from the entire council in regards to this bill. ETIC's history is one that many of you have heard before. We were founded in 1997 at a time where the state's economy was absolutely exploding, and the universities were lagging a little bit in regards to being able to produce enough graduates to support that growth. The mission of ETIC is really straightforward. It's to produce a secondary, engineering and technology system within the state of Oregon that creates opportunity for all Oregonians. This has been done through a public-private partnership with the universities and has to date produced relatively dramatic results. The pyramid that we build our entire basis on is as such. At the lowest level and moving upward, basically, let's have a strategy. Lo and behold, let's actually sit down and think about what we need and where we want to go and what is important to the state of Oregon. And that was the creation of ETIC. A focus. Those things that are measured tend to get done. ETIC's one of the greatest reasons it's been successful. It's kept a very narrow blinders in regards to what's important for this organization, and we have been relentless in pursuing our goals. One of the main goals that's been touted and marketed is our 2X degrees awarded goal. This is increasing the state's university's capacity to be able to double the number of engineers and specialty science degrees throughout the university system from the 1999 baseline, and I have some numbers here to show you where we are today. Another goal is to increase our federal research funds by a total of 5X. So this is the 2X, 5X goal that many of you have heard in the past. The other piece that's not actually in the pyramid is to double the amount of private money coming in to amplify the state investment, and I have those numbers as well. So looking at the pyramid and how we've done, on the left side you see the 1999 baseline of $30 million in regards to research money coming into the state at that time, and the state was producing about 1,174 graduates. In 2013, this is academic year, the state is receiving about $78 million in federal research funds within the engineering schools, and we're producing about 1,813 graduates. So as you can see, we have not reached our 2X goal or our 5X goal at this time. If you look at the bottom, another number that's very important to see at the bottom of the pyramid is we have done extremely well in regards to leveraging private investment, matching state dollars. So state investment to date has been $174 million, and private investment matching has been at about $311 million. If you look at last year's numbers alone, we're looking at about $33 million coming in from private entities into the state engineering schools. So I'd like to say that we're doing better than this, but there are real challenges in reaching these goals that have changed over the last 10 years. Early on, we didn't have enough people applying for these degrees or coming out of the high schools ready to be successful in engineering programs. Today, it's shifted a little bit to the other side of the fence in the sense that we don't have the capacity to even deal with all the kids that want to pursue these degrees at the institutions at this time. Why is this important to the state of Oregon? Ultimately, these are extremely high-wage jobs, critical to the state's economy. As you can see by this pie chart, about 64% of the class of 2011 were working in their field. An additional large percentage of people were going on for advanced degrees within education, or engineering or another related degree, and only a small percentage were actually unemployed. As an owner of a company that employs a great number of engineers, I like to say an unemployed engineer is usually unemployed for a reason in today's economy. The fact of the matter is that the pull from industry right now is incredible, and we need to do everything we possibly can to meet that demand. ETICS really broken down into basically two missions. The first mission on the left is to prepare those Oregonians for those high-paying technology jobs. We make sure that there's the numbers aren't just raw, that we have diversity to those numbers. Where are we trying to get these students from all over the state? We work with institutions all around the state. All seven public institutions participate in ETIC as well as OHSU. A side mission, which isn't a side mission at all, but it is to support the competitiveness of Oregon's technology industry through serious research going on at the universities. These professors that are hired to not only bring up our capacity in regards to the number of students that we produce are also that core base of knowledge that allows this state to move forward in regards to our research and industry competitiveness. So that brings me to today and today's bill. Why is ETIC changing? Higher education is changing. Education across the state is changing. ETIC was legislated and designed to operate within the educational system that existed at the time, which is the Oregon University system. As we all know, that system is being broken up as we speak, and essentially ETIC will be an orphan probably by summer. ETIC has a very engaged and strategically oriented council right now. We have a council that's very interested in taking ETIC to a different level, and that is extraordinarily important and not necessarily something that you have at all times. So this the iron is hot, so to speak, in regards to these reforms and redesigns. At this time, ETIC is asking for approximately 1 year to move to the OEIB. This will give us enough time to appropriately plug into the new system as it crystallizes over the next few months. This requires legislative action because of the way ETIC is written into Oregon State statute. Benefits to the redesign are many, but ultimately I think as we look across the so many different issues that the state is having in regards to workforce and educating our youth and giving opportunities for re-education of older adults, there's a lot of change. STEM Council's been brought into place. You see organizations like the HEC, Oregon Inc., OWIB, and others all moving towards a different direction at this time. It's very important that we figure out the right way to slot in and be a benefit to the state. OIB, we believe, is our best and temporary location because its mission is broad enough, yet strategic enough to match ETIC's reformation goals. OIB and the STEM Investment Council connection. The STEM Investment Council has the task over the next 6 months to evaluate all programs that are involved with the STEM science, technology, engineering, math monikers. And ultimately, we believe that there's real good synergy working in closely with that and, the OEIB. As well as there are three current and former ETIC members on the nine-member STEM Council. So we feel that higher education and community colleges will have a strong voice in that K-20 endeavor. Several questions have been raised and concerned in regards to House Bill 4020. These are some of the preemptive answers to some of your questions, perhaps. There's a major concern whether or not this will divert any of the investment in higher ed to K-12, for example. The ETIC legislation criteria for investments does ensure higher ed support, and it is not to be directed direct to K-12. ETIC's charter does, however, allow us to work with private institutions, the private universities, and or the community colleges, which we traditionally have not done to date, but it is in the statute. One question we also get, I believe it was Representative Greenlick during legislative days, asked why not the HEC right now? Ultimately, we want to allow some time to ensure the structure fits well with the emerging understanding of the HEC scope of work. We also want to explore some options with other agencies. There's been conversation around work with on the other side of the funding fence in the Oregon Economic Development Commission, as well as other workforce-type development opportunities. This is going to take some time. We just didn't want to necessarily jump someplace and get stuck. We want to go someplace that we believe ultimately gives us the flexibility to place ourselves in the future. And then why not the OUS? That's one of the common questions. Well, frankly, there is going to be no OUS. The Chancellor's made it very clear that we cannot stay. There's, I believe, an organization that may pull out of the OUS, the TRUES, I believe, and we don't believe that is a proper place for us to stay either, primarily because the TRUES would have a much narrower scope than what ETIC is ultimately responsible for. The summary of changes is read off by Ms. Cox is that the current ETIC authority is to the State Board of Higher Education. We would like to get that switched to the OEIB. This plan has been discussed and is accepted by Dr. Nancy Golden at the OEIB, Ben Cannon from the HEC, and Dr. Melody Rose, the current chancellor of the OUS system. We've done a tremendous amount of work in regards to leading up to this decision. As the end of the 2013 session, we as soon as we learned what was facing us, we dove into this last summer. We've met and talked to most of the engaged partners in regards to this. Over the course of the summer and the fall, we reviewed and debated and discussed this ad nauseum, and ultimately we believe this is the right way to go. Industry representatives have developed a forward-looking proposal to continue to pull in information on where our ultimate destination will be, but that's something to be decided on in the 2015-2017 biennium. So at this time, I would finish by requesting your formal support for HB 4020, and I can take any questions you may have.
Rep. Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A series, if you would.
Okay.
give me some latitude.
Yes, fire away. We do have the fiscal on the previous bill, and I'm hoping to get us out of here by noon. So
excellent.
If we can. And we're also probably going to carry this bill over for a work session on Wednesday.
Some brief go answers, Eric. I think that's what he would. Brief questions, brief answers.
I will try my best.
Is there any intention of changing the focus of the funding portion of ETIC at this point? Historically, you know, we've talked necessarily a portion of the, because it's public-private, a necessary portion of the funding goes to faculty because you have to have the infrastructure, the faculty there to support the program and the need. I don't see that in this bill. Is there any intention of changing any of that intention at this point?
Chair Harker and Vice Chair Huffman, the answer is pretty straightforward, I think. Not at this time. What we're specifically asking for in this bill is time, and that's what this bill buys us, is the year to have those conversations with everybody involved to decide what our ask is going to be in 2015-2017 session as we get slotted into our future mission. That will be done with working very, very closely with the universities, the Higher Education Coordinating Committee, and others to make sure that we do no harm to the existing investments that we've made at this point.
Okay. Follow up?
Of course.
Now, having said that, you had mentioned something about, you know, maybe not a lot of the work has been done with community colleges and lower and whatnot. I just want to bring up the advising piece of the puzzle again. I think it's really key that initiatives that we do have that are working might work better if we were focusing some of the resources into proper advising, you know, lower down, make sure those high school students understand what the needs are and that there's a great career path out there. Either, you know, if they're not going to pick the previous bill's career path, then, you know, engineering could be a good source. Also to stress that ETIC, having served on a subcommittee in years past, it would come up every biennium about long-term funding for the program. And I just wanted to stress that with my work with ETIC over the years, I have an understanding that ETIC was intended and needs to be a long-term program. It's not something you implement for a couple of biennia and hope you double the number of engineers going to school and then your work is done. It's a long-term commitment by the state. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. Representative Huffman, I can't agree more. There are a number of issues and challenges in this new environment that ETIC has to deal with. And ultimately, what I want to say is that ETIC has been, the things that make ETIC successful need to be maintained, held on to, amplified. There are just some organizational challenges that we've found ourselves in after 14 years of running a program that I think this is our good opportunity to clean those things up. So as we move forward, we run a very transparent, clean organization that is without compromise.
And just a follow-up comment is I appreciate the willingness of ETIC to work with everybody, higher ed, you know, the current university system, you know, places where we do have faculty, future placement of ETIC, all those things. I appreciate the willingness to continue the conversation because I do think it's a critical program and we do need to make sure that there's a lot of input that keeps it on the right path.
Thank you.
Agreed. Additional conversation? Not right now. As I said earlier, we're going to need to carry this over because there has been identified another statute that is in need of amendment for clarification. Apparently, Legislative Council...
I actually have the information here, yeah.
Okay, please do.
One of the things that we... When I speak to you guys, I always talk about as ETIC, and ETIC has a funding agency or line behind it. I've always kind of lumped the two together. Well, in statute, they were unlumped together in, I believe, 2009. Originally, they were one statute. Now they are actually two. There's Oregon Statute 351.663 deals with ETIC itself, the council, the formation of the council, who we report to, what the procedures are that we do our funding with. And that's what we originally were talking about in House Bill 4020. There's also Oregon Statute 351.666, which is the fund itself, the fund authority. So ultimately, what we discovered here recently was that they were split off in 2009 and that we do need to modify the .666 portion of the statute to also point to and be covered by the Oregon Educational Investment Board. This ultimately deals with ETICS-based budget and therefore I believe needs to go, I'm not an expert on this, but it probably needs to go to Ways and Means at that point.
And Legislative Council backs you up on that in terms of modifying that statute. So we are going to, after this meeting, request an amendment to deal with that, and we will combine the -1 amendment in with that, and we will bring the resulting amendment or amendments back here, hopefully on Wednesday, if things progress at proper speed. Yes? All right. Yes, crossed fingers. Anyone else care to speak to this bill at this time? Seeing no one, hearing no one, I am going to close the public hearing on this bill and now go back and open a work session on House Bill 4058. So I would entertain a motion at this moment.
Chair Harker, I move House Bill 4058 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Representative Huffman has moved House Bill 4058 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. What discussion do we have here? None. Okay. Seeing none, clerk will call the roll.
Representative Billion.
Excused.
Representative Gorsuch.
Yes.
Representative Greenlight.
Yes.
Representative Johnson.
Yes.
Representative Smith Warner.
Yes.
Representative Whitman.
Yes.
Vice Chair Gallego.
Yes.
Vice Chair Huffman.
Yes.
Chair Harper.
Yes. All right. Very good. The motion passes, and we need
to help
us. We've passed a bill.
Yes. Nice job, Mr. Chair.
That's a lot more yeses. It
was a lot more yeses.
We need a carrier, or perhaps two. We have a couple of key sponsors here on the committee. You want to co-carry this?
Sure.
Thank you. All right. Very good. What else do we need before adjournment here? Pardon? We close this work session on House Bill 4058. And nothing else? Anything else for the good of the order?
Wednesday time, we're back to 8:30.
Sorry about that.
8:30.
Just want to make sure.
8
a.m., correct?
Perfect.
All right. So the time
All right. Until next Wednesday.
Right. See you all then, and we'll adjourn this
select meeting. I was all for this guy.